Welcome to Work Ninjas, where we explore our relationship with work and the invisible forces that influence our professional lives. Join us here as we share a great podcast and discuss how the concepts and lessons apply to our work and daily practices. Together, we'll learn practical techniques to navigate the proverbial China shop with agility, grace, and precision. Welcome, ninjas. Your training begins now. Welcome to Work Ninjas, the weekly show where we listen to thought-provoking podcasts to reframe the way we approach work and life. I'm your host, Kelly Minton, but it wouldn't be complete without my fellow ninjas, Wayne Kelly and Erica Brown. This week, we're listening to NPR's Hidden Brain, hosted by Shankar Vedantam. Shankar said one of the great things about science is that it can change the way we see the world. This episode, The Scarcity Trap, does exactly that. It explores the concept of scarcity and its impact on our personal and professional lives. It's an intriguing podcast, and I'm sure it will resonate with you. When scarcity captures our attention, it changes the way we think. It monopolizes our thoughts, affecting how we process information, make decisions, and ultimately, how we behave. We'd love for you to follow along, so if you haven't listened to it, hit pause and click the link in the description below. We'll be here when you get back. Let's get to the conversation. Welcome to Work Ninjas. Kelly Minton here.
Hey, everybody. It's Erica Brown.
And Wayne Kelly.
This week, we are listening to NPR's Hidden Brain, and we're going to be talking about scarcity, focusing specifically on decision-making and how that affects us in the workplace. So, Wayne, you always start this. I'm going to ask, what did you think of this podcast?
I thought this was a really interesting podcast. I think it's really relevant. As Eric and I were talking about, I think it actually sets the stage for some of these other podcasts, right? As we talk about scarcity, you know, in the podcast, they talk about scarcity of money, scarcity of food, even scarcity of friends and companionship. But one of the ones that sort of really resonated with me was a scarcity of time. And within the workplace, it was a really clear message that if you don't have enough time, if you are overworked or over busy, it actually changes the way you're able to function. I thought that was a really key message for us as work ninjas and for us in our workplaces.
I think it's interesting because I believe that there's a lot of scarcity in the workplace. I think that there's a lot of lonely people, shame that keeps people lonely. And once we're in that place of lack, regardless of what it is, you can't see beyond it.
And that's where it brought up actually Maslow's hierarchy of needs for me. And that's why I think this is almost a foundational concept. And again, it's almost so obvious that I was waiting for the other sort of, okay, what's that next level of insight? But what they did a really good job of in this podcast was used the science and used some case study experiments that they had done to really explain why scarcity and tunnel vision that comes along with scarcity is such a key issue, is that when you focus in on something because you don't have enough of it, it absolutely impacts the other elements of your life, of your work. And so we've talked in other episodes about putting ourselves out there, facing rejection, embracing our vulnerability for creativity and innovation. I think you really have to start with time constraints that we as a society seem to put on ourselves.
So that's why I think it's important that we all take a little time to reflect on this, because if we did, we would have, I think, so much more compassion for our colleagues and for our clients. Like when someone's in tunnel vision, they don't know that they're in tunnel vision and they think that they're pretty clear-headed, but they do a lot of damage when they're in tunnel vision. You know, and I can say myself, I've done damage when I've been in tunnel vision, 100%. And you can make very expensive mistakes.
Can we explain that concept of tunnel vision a bit more?
Tunnel vision happens when we experience lack. So if we don't have enough, we'll use time, for example. Actually, we'll use food because that was the most palatable example. Oh, terrible. But the fact that you remove something from your life, but because you physically removed it doesn't mean you've mentally removed it from your life. So your brain keeps going back around over and over and over again to the thing that's not there.
And they used a really a core example of hunger and food. After World War II, there was food shortages in Europe. A university in the US decided to study this phenomenon, and they actually asked for volunteers to go through a hunger experiment. And they had men that would eat less food on a daily basis. And they were studying the physical effects. But one of the things they found was that the actual mental effects were just as significant as the physical effects. And so, as Kelly had mentioned, you know, they couldn't stop thinking and talking about food, even though intuitively you would think they'd want to distract themselves. And again, this was a controlled experiment, right? This wasn't, these people had choices, but they were still so focused on food while they were going through this scarcity that that dominated all other aspects of their lives.
The lack became the focal point.
Mm-hmm. When I was listening to this, I was thinking of people who are known as hoarders, right? You know, My grandmother wasn't a hoarder, but I thought of her because it is interesting. You know, you grow up at a time when there is poverty or you are lacking in something. And when all of a sudden you have access to it, you feel the need to make sure that you will never go without again in that regard. But it becomes unhealthy.
You grow an unhealthy narrative between the object of desire and you because you think the last time you got that object of desire, it made you feel good. There's an endorphin rush. There's a reward for it. So why wouldn't you want to do it again? That's your brain naturally trying to repeat patterns.
Or you never want to go back there. So then you begin to collect, you know, you start to feel this urgency around making sure that you have what you need. And when it's available, you want to take it.
And that relates to another concept that they introduced called the scarcity trap.
Oh, I love that.
And so the scarcity trap was making decisions in the short term to address that lack of something. But that actually hurts you in the long term. As a classic example, people make short-term budget decisions to whether it's put food on their table or fill the car up with gas, that they're not paying attention to the long-term financial decisions. If they're focused on food on the table today, maybe they're not focused on rent at the end of the month. The same thing happens within a time scarcity as well. So how does the scarcity trap work with time?
Let's play this out in the workplace, actually. So an example of when you've seen someone in their own scarcity trap.
I find myself what may be scarcity traps fairly frequently as I'm trying to juggle school and work. What I find my natural response is when, and I can feel the number of things on my plate building. And when that gets to a certain point, you know, we talk about that flight or fight, or the third option, freeze. I tend to go to the freeze option when I get into the scarcity trap, and I have trouble doing things like writing emails, or some things that are simple on a normal day become more challenging when you are faced with this sort of overwhelming lack of time.
I love the fact that you noticed it. You can actually change the way you respond when you notice your behavior, because when you learn how you behave in scarcity, you're no different than anyone else. We're not special, and we can see scarcity everywhere once you start looking at it. Once you realize how people guard up against scarcity and the reactive behaviors, then you can have more compassion for your fellow coworkers instead of judging them at face value on their behavior and making snap judgments.
And I think with the last video, actually, with Brené and vulnerability, we talked about the fact that we need to suspend judgment, and empathy is key to eliminating shame. And so when a person is in a bad spot, it's about survival in that moment. So their vision is only short term. They can't look long term. So I think the two pieces there are, you know, if we are going to support people, we need to be compassionate and provide empathy and try to understand their plight in life or where they're coming from. But then also in turn, be able to help them create more of a long-term solution.
That requires looking at people and seeing another story, questioning our own narrative about the people that we work with, because we make assumptions about people all the time. So how about we start questioning our assumptions, because some of it has nothing to do with them. It's our interpretation of their actions or their words. It's how we've interpreted it. We're actually not even seeing the real person that's speaking because we've have so many overtones we've added to it to distort the message.
It's like the coworker who comes in 5 minutes late. You might look at them as incompetent or, you know, lazy or whatever it might be, when in fact they are handling so many things and they are beyond competent and they're actually being able to provide in so many areas of their lives.
I like what you were talking about earlier, Kelly, when we said we need to recognize this as a society. I mean, again, thinking of it from the workplace perspective and scarcity around time. How many of us, when we're asked how we're doing, our first inclination is to say busy, because that's almost like a badge of, hey, I'm doing important stuff. But again, the science and the literature and the podcast goes over is that focus, or the sort of that predisposition to be overworked and almost using that as a badge of honor, affects our quality of work.
Remember, they talked about bandwidth. And when I finally understood this idea of bandwidth, it made so much more sense when I was dealing with people, because when you're at 100%, you do not have the ability to expand, because thus you are at 100%. And expecting our coworkers to flex to 125 when we fail to realize that they're already at 100, then we don't have compassion for others.
And what is the concept of bandwidth?
I see it as how much can we give? How much can we stretch? You know, to what point have we reached our limit?
Our resources are finite, right? And so if in terms of time, we only have 24 hours in a day, we can't work 26 hours. Bandwidth, if 5 hours are taken up with one task and we're expected to do another 5 hours on another task in a 7 hour day, that doesn't work.
Because nothing comes for free. When you do one thing, you have that lost opportunity of another. And the last I heard, I can't clone me.
This also relates back to the Brené Brown podcast, when she said that the biggest shame facing women is
doing it all.
The expectation to be able to, how'd she say it? To do everything and not let them see you sweat. I did some math as a male in the workplace and as a father, and knowing that I work 7 to 9 hour days and being an attentive parent, which I love and enjoy in the mornings and after schools and in the evenings, that's another 3-4 hours easy that you add to your day. So we're talking, you work anywhere between 11 to 13, 14 hours a day between family and work. And, you know, if someone was just putting those hours in work, we'd acknowledge that that's a huge load. But for people with families or people with other commitments, school, we don't tend to equate all of those pieces together as demanding our time. And that's, again, when we come back to bandwidth, we sort of start to expect people actually have more than 24 hours in a day.
Mm-hmm. I think as a society, we really need to start shifting what that standard is in terms of work, because the video also talked about the fact that if where you put your success is and your where your tunnel or your focus is work, then it starts to impact your role as a parent. At nighttime, I'm tucking my kids in and reading stories, but it's amazing how the mind can work in two ways. And you're reading a story, but you're thinking about work. So you're not truly present there for your children. You're not giving that time with them the focus and attention it deserves. And the same with at work. You're not giving the work the attention it deserves because you're worrying about all the other things that you're also supposed to be making happen.
And then we build a relationship, not with the time with our children, but we build a relationship with our own distraction. And we berate ourselves because you notice that you're not paying attention. And so now that's another reason that we can shame ourselves, because then we say, bad parent. And then you go to work and then you think about your kids. Now you're a bad employee, and you shame yourself some more. And then we go home. And then what happens when we're living in a place of lack? Of scarcity. That's all we can think about. So then now all we can think about is how we are failing at everything, even though we've never actually defined what failure is. And so we're always losing. For me, this gives me a tremendous amount of compassion for those that have more complicated lives, because I'm not looking after a parent who is sick on top of working and on top of being a parent. So I like to think of it as, if I struggle with this, how are other people doing it? And then all of a sudden, the world looks different and the people that you work with look different, because now you realize that custodian probably has another job and they're probably juggling a very complicated life at home, you know, but they show up every day and they smile. And then you realize how much they're giving in spite of everything they're going through. And it's a much more holistic picture.
The video actually referenced that, you know, do we really need to berate someone for coming in 5 minutes late? You don't know how well they've actually been doing to get to that point.
And this also builds on the Sean Aker episode where he talks about flipping success and happiness, right? And again, the same message that if we focus on being happier in the workplace, we are much more effective workers rather than focusing on the success in the workplace. You know, in this case, when we're talking about scarcity, the quantity of time versus the quality of time. If we put the emphasis on the quality over the quantity, we'll be much more effective workers. How does being present work for both of you, it's a challenge, right? And again, in this podcast, they talk about the importance of being in the moment, being in that task, as Erica referenced earlier, not letting your brain think about work while you're with your kids or vice versa. How does that work for both of you?
And over the past year, I've been very mindful of the need for presence. And so I've been trying very hard. And trying is the key word. As soon as you start to fall off the path, you have to be able to bring yourself back into that moment. So when I'm with my kids, I'm putting my phone away and not being distracted by that. I need to give them that time. And when I'm talking to them, I'm looking them in the eyes rather than shouting from another room. It's really difficult. And you have to really pay attention to it. And some days are better than others, but it is something they have to be very intentional about.
Mindfulness for me is paying attention to my reactions, because I'm an emotional being and my emotions can sabotage me. They are the giant elephant in this little body that drives what I do and the insanity that comes from my mouth. That's why work ninjas exist. So I find it important because I can unplug very quickly and go to work, be a zombie. So for me, I tie it very closely to my own well-being, because you're a person outside of your job. Just as a reminder to anybody out there that wondered if they had an identity beyond their title, you could lose your job tomorrow. And it's a choice whether or not you want to sink your entire identity with that.
You know, for me, one of the struggles is still the feeling of guilt, right? And goes back to shame. And so again, I'm trying to work really hard at using my holidays for holidays and taking time, you know, to go skiing with the kids and not worry about work while I'm with the kids, and vice versa. Then when you're at work, not feeling guilty about things that you're missing with the family. When we talk about the impact of scarcity, they used a really good example talking about poverty, and the research is showing that it's not that poor people are making bad decisions. It's that poverty or being poor changes the way that we make decisions. And it doesn't matter if it's the person in the story who lost their job or if it was you or I. In that same context, we would make very similar decisions, and that we need to work in more acceptance and understanding of that context.
And that's what I really noticed with this, is when people are in their tunnel, it's off in your own head and you're on your own. And it wasn't until the woman in her residency, or the woman who lost her job and was in scarcity of funds and dollars, until they hit that breaking point where they went and sought help, that they were able to start to turn things around, to be able to get out of that tunnel, to get out of their own head. You need to be able to ask for help, and you need to be willing to accept help.
We've talked a bit about reflecting on our own work environment and knowing, you know, we can sort of flag when we get overworked. But it's important that we have those conversations with each other and not increase the expectations at that point, or being able to scale it back and say, okay, look, let's go with an 80% workload for the next week or two so that we can do our best work on these key issues.
Or maybe let's actually plan for 80% workload 100% of the time, so we allow the 20% flex when required, which makes people more creative and brings our best selves to work, because you're rested and you have time to do self-care.
The other piece that I really want to try and implement myself is the rule that they talk about right at the end, where when you're asked in the workplace or personal commitments, when you're asked to commit to something in the future, treat it like they're asking you to commit to it tomorrow. And if it's not important enough for you to commit to tomorrow, then it's not going to be important enough to commit to for a future tomorrow. And so that really helps manage your time and really gives you another perspective to view all of these sort of great opportunities that come up, but you do have to prioritize. Otherwise, it's easy to go from the 80% up to 120%. That's one of my biggest challenges.
And you have to allow yourself to be able to say no without carrying any guilt in association with that, which is easier said than done.
This can change your perspective. Genuinely. And I think in our workplaces, we need a genuine perspective shift in how we treat work and how we treat each other when we're at work. We expect each other to be machines and robots, but we have lots of room for our own issues and our own shortcomings. And we have lots of excuses for those. But then our expectation is that everybody else respond in a superior way. if you're not conscious, you actually will mirror your own insecurities back on people. So if you don't feel you're in control, when you run into your coworker who's got a messy desk, what that's going to stir up in you.
And I find the other scenario is often, we've been doing Work Ninjas now, either with our in-person conversations or the podcast for a good 8 months now. And I find myself harder on myself than on others. So I do find myself being more considerate or trying to understand the bigger context with some of the people I work with. But then I'll go back to myself and I'll berate myself for not getting something done today that I planned to get done. You know, even though when I look at my notes, half a dozen other sort of critical things came up. Or if I'm not scheduling myself downtime, surprise, surprise, after a few, you know, a week or two of that, you have a little burnout. You have trouble actually focusing. We need to make sure that both in terms of how we work with our coworkers, that we're affording them that courtesy and that understanding, but also for ourselves.
Certainly that self-care piece that really needs to happen.
I think that's a really important point that the video pushes, is the whole idea of self-care and balancing the external with the internal, because external demands are always going to be there. How are you supporting yourself internally? How are we refueling? I think that we are a starved society because we go home and we don't fuel. We watch Netflix and we numb and avoid.
What are two or three takeaways from this podcast?
The biggest one would be start noticing scarcity, because it's everywhere. Once you have words to define it, you're going to see it everywhere. And it will change the way perhaps you treat yourself and maybe treat the people around you.
Yeah, I think the time management piece is really important too. We tend to, you know, in the example of the individual who was in her residency, she was putting all of her energy and focus into her work. And then when she finally created her workspace into a studio and returned to something that actually she loved, but in another lifetime, so to speak, she was able to start creating that bit of a balance. And it meant that she was able to actually function better at what she was doing in that moment, because she gave it its full focus. And so I think finding that balance is really key.
So we need to watch for and acknowledge scarcity in the workplace. We need to individually put aside time to reflect and to recuperate. And then the third piece is we need to be better at saying no. You know, that was again when he talks about, if something is not critical tomorrow, then why would it be critical in 2 months? So to be able to say no, to manage that time. Are there any other tips or tricks that are either in this podcast or that related to it that we want to share?
I would just say maybe suspend judgment and try to understand where others are coming from. Again, too, I think we all need help sometimes, but we can also be ones who can offer help.
That's awesome. You know, we've had 3 or 4 great episodes already, and there's been a lot of concrete tips that have come out of this, and they are all interwoven. I think, Kelly, you've done a great job of sort of layering on the podcast and sort of the topics that we've been discussing.
And I think it's interesting because when you start to see those patterns over and over again, they start to really, you know, everything kind of falls away. And those are those core pieces that if you're looking to create a little bit of a strategy or plan for yourself that you can really focus on.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening to Work Ninjas. As always, Kelly,
Erica,
and Wayne
here to sign off. It was terrible.
That's okay. Maybe I'll sound to the round.
Kind of felt like Ralph or something.
Oh, weird. Hey, you gotta work it out, right?